Hello, my name's Jamie Gordon.
And I'm Ginny Carlin.
And this is the BFBS podcast, Mav Geeks, a military aircraft obsession.
Our final episode of Series 5. It's a bit like the last day of school. I've bought a game in. Jamie's wearing his leg warmers and there's some cheesy puffs and a Mr. Kipling French fancy somewhere.
I am straight out of fame. But don't forget, we are with you for a very special Christmas Eve episode of Mav Geeks on air at 3 o'clock UK time on BFBS The Forces Station. We're not tracking Santa, but Al Bridger is bringing the recipes for a succulent Christmas dinner. Saying this, we have sent a mavogram to the North Pole, so you never know who might turn up.
Well, you did promise, Jamie. You promised you'd get Santa if I let you talk about the F4 Phantom.
I haven't told you the story of when I flew in an F4 Phantom for a while, have I? I do think there's a listener who hasn't heard it all yet.
I'm pretty sure that, like, everyone has heard it, Jamie. But I want to ask you about two things. First of all, did you know that the 3rd of December last week was allegedly the day that there was meant to be an alien invasion? And also, what's happened in your aviation week?
No, I didn't know December the 3rd was alien invasion week. Did it happen?
Well, bizarrely, I can't believe I'm admitting to this. I do follow a few of the UFO and UAP pages. And I'm pretty sure our producer Sean does as well. He looks like he's a UFO follower. And a few people were saying, you know, oh, it's starting, and they'd see, like, they'd put a picture of a streetlight and everything. You know, there's a bit of Mickey taking. But there was a few things that made me, that looked quite real, especially the UK ones. There was a few around Derbyshire, which really scares me because, like, obviously I am from Derbyshire. Maybe, I don't know if it was an invasion, but they might have come to have a little peek. They probably wanted to listen to Mav Geeks.
It wouldn't surprise me. There have been some very weird cloud formations around the UK recently, so that could explain one or two things. Anyway, as far as my aviation week is concerned, this came up on my TikTok feed, and I just thought it's worth having a quick listen. What do you think this is?
Vertical 5-5. Easing more power. Smoke up, push, go. Diamond Stinger.
Right, jump, sensei, action.
Vertical 5-5. Up we go. Ease the pull. Rolling out. The loop break. Smoke up, push. Airspeed call. Diamond Souls, comp car, tabernacle. Let's have a go.
I think that's fascinating. And what it is, it's an old clip. There's nothing new about it. It was a guy called Commander Brian Kesselring, who at the time was the boss of the Blue Angels. And what's going on there, basically, is chair flying. What they do before every show is they sit down in a conference room on a chair and they close their eyes and they go through the whole routine in their chair, moving their, as if they were got the control stick and the throttle, and they're doing all that, and they're doing it to the intonation of the boss. And I know the Red Arrows do this to a degree as well. I just thought it was quite fascinating that these people actually have muscle memory when they're doing their routines. They could probably close their eyes in the jet whilst they're up in the air and do it, listening to that and just knowing what they were doing. I thought it was really quite interesting.
I did wonder what it was. At first, I thought when he said smoke, I thought maybe that has got, perhaps the clue is in the word. When I first heard him. And then I thought, you know, when fighter pilots have had baby and they've got the baby in the high chair and they're trying to feed them and normally go, oh, choo-choo, here comes the train. I thought it was something like that, maybe. You know what I mean?
Absolutely spot on.
I don't know, but I loved it.
Anyway, did you ever have an Airfix model, Jinta?
I still have two Airfix models. Let me tell you, I've got a Dan Busters Lancaster Special, which an old boyfriend bought me, and not an old boyfriend, like a previous boyfriend, you know, he wasn't like in his 90s or something, but he was one of the original crew. So I've got that. I've not got a great steady hand, so it does look a bit shot up. I've also got a McDonnell Douglas DC-8, which is a really old one I bought. And I think that's probably out of the two is my favourite, really, just because it's quite old, very retro. And you know what I'm like with my retro jets. What about you, Jamie? Have you got, I can imagine you've got probably got an office full of them hanging from the ceiling and you go in and play planes every day.
Do you know, I don't. I used to make them as a kid and I loved doing it. And I don't think I ever strapped one to the ceiling. But no, it definitely helped in my understanding of aviation, because I went on to fly gliders and stuff. So I think it kind of helped, but then just turned me into a nav geek. So there you go. So we can't take credit for this. This was producer Sean's idea. But as we head towards Christmas, what is the quintessential Christmas present for Av and Mav geeks? And of course, it's Airfix. So we spoke to Dale Luckhurst, head of brand for Airfix, and it turns out he's a proper Mav geek too.
Dale, I can only say from my point of view as a kid that working for Airfix when I was a kid and making models is like would have been a dream come true. Let's talk about your role first and foremost, and how did you come to be at Airfix?
So, yeah, I mean, this is my second time back at the business, bizarrely. There's a lot of people like yo-yos that seem to leave and then come back. There's obviously something there that draws us back. I originally joined the business in 2008 after seeing an advertisement in a local paper for a marketing assistant for Airfix. Never thought that I'd work for the brand. Never thought I'd work for the Hornby Hobbies business. Didn't even know that it was practically down the road from me. So yeah, in joining in 2008, that started my marketing career really. And then not really knowing what I wanted to do after leaving sixth form, all of a sudden I found myself in a whole new world, and what an amazing category to sort of be working in as well. So I left the business in 2014 after working on a number of brands. And then a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I was very fortunate to receive a phone call to ask me what I was doing and to come back as head of brand for Airfix. So it's a privilege to work for the business and work for the brand. I always liken it to a Doctor Who job. You could sort of name most of the people that have had this position, and it's in the brand's life, if you know what I mean. So, you know, decisions that were made 20, 30, 40 years ago, we can still put on to someone. The brand has changed hands over many years, over its lifetime. And in 2006, it was taken on by Hornby Hobbies. And since then, we've sort of been going to strength to strength, which is, again, amazing to be part of.
Dale, as we're approaching Christmas, then, you know, I'm thinking years and years of young boys and girls receiving stuff in their Christmas stocking made by those legacy names like Airfix and Hornby. Is it still as popular as it was, say, back in the 60s, 70s and 80s?
I'd love to say it was, but it isn't. Video games, and you can remember back then when the video games consoles just took off. We've never recovered since then, but there are new areas that we focus on. And whereas, I guess, back in the 60s, Airfix was considered very much a toy. Now it's seen as a sort of more of an adult hobby. There's still plenty of children that get into it, and it's fantastic. And we encourage that for a number of programs that we run. But it's not games console area, and certainly, unfortunately, not games console numbers. And the numbers we used to see in the business, you know, Woolworths would take tens of thousands of a certain kit every week. You know, every week a new product was being launched in Woolworths. We average about one new product every week. They're not all new molds, new designs, but it's still about 52 a year that we release. Unfortunately, we don't have the likes of Woolworths and those sort of high street retailers that people can find. They've all got a local one that they can go and get their product. But we are out there. And it's still a stocking filler product, one of our cheapest products, but for aimed for that sort of demographic. Retails for $11.99. Yeah, that's a 1/72 scale Spitfire, and it includes paints, glues, and brushes. So everything you need if you haven't done any modelling at home on Christmas afternoon, where you're trying to get away from the family a bit, perhaps, or certainly on Boxing Day, you can sort of squirrel yourself away and start making a Spitfire.
Just been looking at the front page of the Airfix website, the shop there, and there's clearly a very strong military connection with the kits that you're manufacturing and selling. You know, I'm glad to see the Phantoms on your front page. I had to get that one in. But is the military model making the core business still, or because I know you do plenty of other stuff as well?
It is by far our biggest category, and within that, Second World War historically has been our biggest category and still is. Over the last 5-10 years, we've seen more interest in Cold War subjects. We believe that's down to those servicemen and women that worked on that sort of equipment now at an age where perhaps they've retired. They've got a little bit more free time. So they're wanting to model things that they were surrounded by during during their service career. That's one reason that we like to believe. But also there's just more history there that's out in the open. You know, there's more stories. There's more people talking about the sort of things that the Phantoms got up to down in the Falklands or whatever, you know, whereas that during the heyday of those aircraft wasn't a thing. We still do we do F-35s, we do Eurofighter Typhoons, and we also do modern supercars within our starter set range as well. So we try to keep it quite broad-arching, appealing, but our biggest categories are by far military.
Taking it on a little bit further, Dale, I think back, bizarrely, I've got two Airfix models, two different ends of the scales. I've got a Dam Busters Lancaster bomber,
yeah,
and I've got a KLM DC-8. It's an old one. I mean, you've said about the Second World War specifically, and I can completely understand with the Cold War, you know, people growing up in the Cold War as well, seeing those aircraft and wanting to recreate them. But what is, for the Second World War, what is the most popular Airfix model that you've got?
Spitfires, hand down. Hands down. Absolutely, Spitfires. And the Hurricane lovers hate it. But everyone recognises Spitfires, and the majority of Second World War aircraft, especially those now that fly in UK skies that are being flown by the BBMF or other heritage operators, they don't see them as war machines anymore. They just see them as British icons. They see them as, you know, the sort of veterans that they are. They all can. They can tell a story just like a real person. And I think with films and so much more that's sort of come out in recent years, people just love them for the aircraft, for the stories. And I don't think you get that with brand new modern stuff. And you're starting to get a few things with Cold War aircraft as well. You know, the number of books written on Sea Harriers going down as a Falklands, that opened a lot of people's eyes, and they start to see Harriers in a different light as well. And of course, they're amazing aircraft, and very fortunate to still see them fly in the UK for REAP when the Spanish and Italians bring them over and stuff. It's such a shame that we don't fly them, but people have so many stories about these types of aircraft. And Second World War is, yes, it was a huge conflict, huge war, but people don't compare that to sort of more modern conflicts.
And I think it's a nice idea. You've got an 80th anniversary kit out, marking that anniversary for the Dam Busters, where you get to build a Lancaster bomber and an F-35B, all in the same box, which is a very nice touch.
Yeah, so Airfix has always had a Dam Buster-type product, whether it's just a Lancaster on its own or a gift set with another aircraft. And up until last year, it's always been a Lancaster with a Tornado. And our Tornado tool, our mold, we call them tools, is quite old now. It's quite worn. It's been used a lot. Our Lancaster tool is a new version, new design, new tool within the last 10 years or so. So we decided to put the Lancaster with an F-35B, and it sells extremely well, especially this time of year as well. So I think that retails for about £50-55. So it's not pocket money, but you get two aircraft, two decent size aircraft, and everything you need in there. And again, they tell a story, which is, you know, everyone loves.
Now, one of the reasons I love Airfix, Dale, is because I have very little attention to detail. Airfix has massive attention to detail, and you need to have big attention to detail to do it. So it's kind of almost like a bit of an exercise in mindfulness for me to do anything like Airfix. What is the level of detail that we're talking about with these aircraft? Because it looks to me like it's as though somebody's just shrunk one of these aircraft and broken it into parts and give you some paint to paint it. It looks that authentic.
It's essentially what we do, actually. So short of engineering something to fly, we go to huge levels of detail to get the shape right, to get the panel lines, the number of rivets. We jokingly in the industry, and this won't be offending any modelers out there, we call them rivet counters. They themselves call themselves rivet counters. So we go to huge levels of detail. As part of our R&D process, we will, where possible, get the original manufacturer's drawings, and we will use those as a base. We will go and 3D scan, LiDAR scan, real aircraft or real subject matter. The difference between those two things, the shape is ultimately the same. But when you 3D LiDAR scan something, you really pick up the textures. So you think, there was a photo recently of a B-52 American bomber and how the skin on a B-52 is not smooth. It's all rippled in between all the joints and everything else. And by LiDAR scanning that, we can pick all of that up and then we replicate that in plastic. So you get all this texture. Our latest, what we call Super Kit, our big 600-piece Spitfire kit, has all this oil canning texture. So on a Spitfire, obviously, it was a mixture of mediums, but mainly metal. And that metal was so thin that in between all the spars on its fuselage, yeah, the metal does sink in somewhat. And fabric sinks in on a wing of a Hurricane in a different way. And an Avro Anson, which was a very slow, clumsy twin-engine, what was originally a fighter, bizarrely, when you ever see one. But at the beginning of the Second World War, they ended up using them as a bomber training aircraft. That uses Aeroply, which is 0.8 mil thick on the wings. So people look at it and think it's fabric, but it's not. It's plywood. So we can pick all of that up. And that's without going into where all the panel lines are, you know, the amount of detail that we can now CAD up and mold into our tools and into our plastic. But one thing I say is modeling ultimately is what you make it as a modeler. And that's such a cliche thing to say, but if you're not too worried about the full detail, you can just glue it together, paint it, and you've enjoyed those few hours. That's a massive tick in the box. Equally, if you want to spend weeks on the same model, but you've enjoyed it, it doesn't matter, you know.
I mean, it's fascinating that you go to that length and that trouble to replicate these aircraft. What about aircraft that are being developed now and in the future? On this program, we've talked about the Su-57 from the Russians, the new stealth jet in China. I mean, are those things that you can realistically think about manufacturing in the future? Do you need to get permissions from people? Or, you know, is that the kind of thing you're looking forward to?
So all modern aircraft will have a license attached. So we have to get permission from the owner of that IP to replicate the aircraft or the vehicle. That's number one. We have to choose whether it's a subject matter that we want to get into. And for us as a brand, as a business, we're steering clear of any modern Russian stuff for obvious reasons. And we've got plenty of other subject matter to go and do anyway. We're just going to release a brand new Eurofighter Typhoon, so a Tranche 4. So we've worked with a number of Eurofighter operators in Europe to crawl all over the aircraft. We work with BAE Systems to look at as much as we can, or as much as we're allowed, rather. And we also went over to Germany and worked a little bit with Airbus and how they're sort of pulling Eurofighter Typhoons together over there. So with any project, we like to get up and close personal with the subject matter. It's not just a case of looking at some 2D drawings. It's not just a case of looking at some 3D scan data. We like to get our engineers, our CAD engineers, up to it, and they start to climb around it. They get amazing access to this stuff, obviously. But sometimes there's aircraft or subject matter that doesn't exist anymore. It simply doesn't exist anymore. And or you might have the wheel hub of something, or, you know, an elevator strut or something like that. That, you know, that's not enough to go on to develop a product. But we always find drawings. We always find a way of being able to engineer something. So we have flown people over to Norway, over to the US to scan things, to take photos and measurements of stuff. So yeah, it literally just depends on what it is and how. And you'll find us popping up all over the place. It's quite bizarre, but it's great when people don't know who our engineers are and who our researcher is. But as soon as we start putting them on videos and bits and pieces, then they can't go anywhere without being spotted. And there's always someone that then takes a photo of one of us crawling around something. It ends up on a forum and then the rumours start. Funny enough, there was a cockpit at Imperial War Museum, Duxford, that this is many years ago, that the guys, and I can't remember what it was, the guys were measuring, and the museum had opened up the cockpit, and the guys were in there with a tape measure. And afterwards, they closed the cockpit down and went, thanks very much. About 6 months later, the guys were looking for that tape measure and they realized that actually it was trapped inside the cockpit of this aircraft at Duxford, and it had our logo and name and everything on it. But no one ever realized or ever spotted it. So that was a sure sign, sure tail way of spotting where Airfix had been by us leaving bits of equipment around.
So, Dave, you say you've got researchers, you've got to humour me with this. All I can think is that you've got a room full of people you open the door on and they're all testing the Airfix kits. So they're all really good, a bit like Airfix elves, putting them together, sticking them, painting them, all got bits of the aircraft stuck to the fingers because, like, sometimes that's what happens, isn't it? You know, yeah. Is this true? Please humour me.
It is. It is. They don't like being called elves, though. But actually, the office dynamic has changed quite a lot in the last 12 months or so. If you go back 12 months, I'd be sat at my desk. There was about 12 of us that only wear Airfix hats in the business, actually, which isn't many. Most of them are engineers or within the engineering team. They'd be sat there with their headphones on, listening to music or whatever. And all you can hear without a pair of headphones on is just sounding something down. And I always use the joke that clearly something's not fitting properly if the engineer is having to sand something down that much. But it was always first test shots. It was always, you know, just them building some bits and pieces up. And that's just part of the R&D, is to see how much you need to take away from something. Go back to our mold manufacturer to tell them, like, you need to cloak this up by X thousand of a mil or whatever it is. But yeah, it is exactly what you imagine it in your head. So the office is full of Airfix models all over the place, although currently we don't have any hanging from the ceiling. So
Well, it's great to hear that such attention to detail is still going on. Airfix has quite a strong relationship with, you know, the military. Let's talk about you for a start. You were born in Rintel. Your dad was a signaller. You got dragged around the world a bit. So tell us a bit more about those connections between Airfix and the military, and in particular, Models for Heroes, which really appealed to me.
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned, I was born in 1987 in Rintel, Gütersloh. My sister, a couple of years later, when we were still in Germany. And then I was dragged to Cyprus, which I seem to remember I quite enjoyed. And then Blandford Forum, home of the signals, which I seem to remember I didn't enjoy as much as Cyprus. So I guess the military has always been in my blood, and my dad introduced me to Airfix when I was younger and so on. So, which is why when I walk around these places, museums, or get access to bases and see some really cool stuff, I just, you know, it's. I feel so privileged for being in this position. We can't do our jobs. We wouldn't be the brand we are today without the support of the military, all four forces, and the access that they provide us. There's the charities you mentioned, Jamie. Models for Heroes. It's a nationwide charity, all volunteers that support serving, ex-serving, and blue light personnel through mindfulness, mental well-being, using plastic model making as the medium for that. You can actually be prescribed model making on the NHS by your GP. It's absolutely amazing. And we sort of pile them with a load of kits every year and whatever they need, and we support them in every way that's possible.
Excellent. Dale, I've got to ask you, I mean, we've talked about which is the best seller of Airfix. What for you is your favourite? Because, I mean, we're talking about trains as well here, aren't we, with Hornby? You know, I have to say that I think probably me and Jamie, deep down, are sort of train geeks as well as av geeks. So, you know, I'm pretty sure it's the same for you. What is your absolute favourite model that you've got at Airfix?
Well, we don't talk about the dark side, which is the train side of the business. We're all very competitive as brand managers within the business. And for those that don't know, so within Hornby Hobbies Group, obviously we've got Hornby the Trains, Corgi, which is a die-cast brand, and they have a mixture of subject matter. And we also have Scalectric, which is very much a toy, but very detailed. So there's certainly rivalry internally between all of that. My personal subject matter, though, I think bizarrely it's not an aircraft. Although I appreciate them, I'm pretty useless with modeling aircraft. We released a 135th scale Ferret Scout car last year, I think it was, which is it fits within on your size of your passport. And my dad had a story of running up Akatiri runway in a ferret, and he's always told me that he did this, and then I was able to put it in the range and for everyone to enjoy, and every modeler to be able to model it. The first time that vehicle has ever been done in plastic injection molding, which is fantastic. I have since driven a ferret, so I can now go back on his story many years ago and say, well, yes, I also drove one around the field in Maidstone. So that's perfect for me. And as a bit of an armour modeller, because I find it easier, I find it more enjoyable, you know, glue it together, spray it green in the garden, throw a load of mud at it, and I've enjoyed it. I'm not having to try and get something absolutely dead smooth like a Spitfire.
Well, the ferrets are very well known in Cyprus. I remember seeing them when I was living there as a kid, a really important part of the military setup there. Dale, it's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
And thank you for all the good work you do for Models for Heroes and the supporting of military organisations. It's been great fun to chat.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.
Do you know, I love that, Jamie, because I love how detailed, you know, they don't just go, oh, this is what we think a Spitfire looks like. They literally take a Spitfire to bits and send people in to find all the plans, and just shows the absolute level of detail and the quality, really, of these things. And lovely hearing from Dale talking about Models for Heroes as well, and the whole mindfulness thing, because that's what I would associate it with, really. It must be something very, very calming about putting a model together, apart from the bit when you can't stick it and then chuck it across the room, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That was lovely. And I think that's almost a wrap on Series 5. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch to suggest a guest for Series 6 or an aircraft, or you just want to chat about one of the episodes, it's mavgeeks@bfps.com, and we'd really love a review if you don't mind. Remember, you can hear all 5 series wherever you get your pods.
And a massive thank you to all our guests, to you, our fellow AV and MAV geeks, to Sean Harper, our brilliant producer and sound designer, and Gisella Waldron. And thank you, Jamie, for being the best partner in planes a MAV geek could ever wish for.
And thank you for making my week every week for the last 3 months. We'll catch you for Season 6 next year, and don't forget, a bonus MAV Geeks on air on Christmas Eve, hopefully with Santa. That's at 3 o'clock UK time on BFBS, the Forces Station. Catch you next year, and happy Christmas.
Ta-ra!
Thank you.